Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome to episode 262 of Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving, and if you're not in the United States, hope you had a nice weekend regardless. We are back with an episode before the winter meetings. We'll probably do an episode either during or right after the winter meetings next week. So until then, here is Chris McShane and myself talking about all things Mets. And just a programming note, this will be Chris's last show for a few weeks. He is traveling on his honeymoon. So enjoy your trip, Chris. And here we go.
Well, Chris, you are just mere hours away from getting on an airplane to the other side of the world. So we are doing our last Amazing Avenue Audio together until probably our year-end spectacular, whatever that will look like. So we have a little bit of some trade rumors going on here. The Mets are reportedly interested in getting Ian Kinsler from the Tigers. My initial thought when I heard this was, dope, it's 2009. And then realized, oh no, it's not anymore. Do I still want Ian Kinsler on my team? What was your initial reaction to hearing this rumor?
Did I miss the Mets re-signing John Neese?
Yep. See?
that was, you know, I don't know who you'd have to give up to get Ian Kinsler. But coming at it sort of from an opposite perspective, I was never a big Ian Kinsler fan.
Okay.
I don't know why. I don't know if he, like, looking back, like, did I have him on my fantasy team in 2012 when he wasn't, you know, that was probably his, and last, this season, the 2017 season, were really the only two that he was not terrific, you know, as a hitter, or at least not above average.
What year did he come up? Offhand, I can't remember.
That 2006.
2006, I mean, okay.
In full disclosure, I'm just looking at his baseball reference page. But
okay, fair enough.
But yeah, no, he's been around for a while, and I don't know. You look at it, this is a guy who, excuse me.
I know you're going to miss me. You don't have to get choked up, though, buddy.
The heat in this apartment is not commensurate with the actual temperature that it is right now. The window's wide open. The fan's not on because we care about the quality of this recording for you all. Yeah, so a little stuffy. But yeah, I don't know what it was. You look back at it, year in and year out, he was putting up pretty decent numbers. His defense was always rated well. You know, his wins above replacement was solid. I guess, like, in a way, you would look before Daniel Murphy turned into what he did.
He looks a lot like Ian Kinsler.
Yeah, like, as a hitter, at least. You know, so the kind of career that I thought Daniel Murphy would have based on the first, based on all of his Mets tenure. You know, I didn't completely buy the crazy run in the postseason. So it's kind of like that, but with good defense or great defense. You know, and that's a
viable
good player.
Yeah.
So I've sort of been talked into, oh, he's pretty decent. The only thing is now he's, you know, coming off this down year. So yeah, I mean, it all comes down to money again. You know, he's making $11 million, which shouldn't be an obstacle for any major league team.
Right.
But who they give up, I imagine it wouldn't have to be anything too spectacular. But is it, if it's a third of the available budget, I don't know.
Right. You're not going to give up anybody who's going to take some dollars off of that. Right. They're not going to trade Asdrubal Cabrera for him. They're not going to trade somebody who's making any money for Kinsler. So, you know, you're looking at somebody who's probably making $500,000 or $750,000 for $11 million. And as you said, if this was a legitimate Major League franchise, that shouldn't be an issue. But we all know what the Mets ownership does with money.
Yeah. So it's... if it's a spot where you can upgrade... you know, we've talked about it plenty. We've written about it plenty. They need to upgrade in several places. So I'm willing to buy, you know, 1 year, good bounce back candidate. yeah, he's going into his age 36 season. You know, it's if he had been crappy for 5 years in his 30s, that might be a little more like, I don't know. But I'm willing to buy that you know, if you could trade a mid-level to lower-level prospect for him, sure. Sign me up. But
I've seen some of the Mets Twitter faithful, who we know always have the pulse of the front office, truly, you know, the finger on the pulse, have been floating a Dom Smith for Ian Kinsler trade. And while I understand the impulse behind that trade, that just creates an even bigger hole at first base for the Mets to need to fill. And if they're shooting $11 million off their budget, that means there's even less for them to spend on a first baseman. So I don't know how I feel about that trade.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not the biggest Dom Smith believer, but that, you know, that doesn't work.
There's just too much upside there, potential upside.
Yeah, and I don't really know if it works for the Tigers. You know, I mean,
see, Chris, here's your problem. You're considering the Tigers. We're talking about Mets Twitter here.
I mean, when Victor Martinez is done with his contract, I don't know how much longer.
He has one more year.
Right. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, but it's I don't know how much longer he intends to play. I don't know if he'll end up staying there. But between him and Miguel Cabrera, you know, there wouldn't really be any significant time or place for Smith to play for them.
The squinting argument I heard was that, you know, if you look at this hard enough, if Martinez leaves after next season, then you can have Smith as your first baseman while you have Cabrera as your full-time DH. And so Smith was going to start the year in the minors for the Mets anyway, so you might as well have him be in the minors for the whole season for Detroit and then, you know, see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, the people, the Mets fans who wanted Dom Smith up when Duda was still here and still producing for this team, mm-hmm, would lose their minds if Dom Smith was traded for Ian Kinsler.
Yeah, probably. do you think there's, just sidebar here, do you think there are still like Dom believers out there in that part of the fan base? I feel like that part of the fan base loves you until you debut, and then the second you strike out, you're a bum forever.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, there's like this weird, like, I don't know if this is accurate, but to me, I associate the people who were really passionate about Smith with being sort of anti-Alderson.
Yeah, I don't know. I have the same impression about that.
But he picked him.
I was going to say, it makes almost no sense because Alderson drafted him, and clearly Alderson believed in the skill set enough to call him up this season.
Right. You're right. They you know, made room by trading Duda and brought him up and everything. And yeah, there are guys who run the draft and run the scouting department and all that, but I would be surprised if a GM didn't have to sign off on
on a first round draft pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially an upper half of the first round. You know, it's, you're listening to your staff and you trust them, but I think ultimately you're going to have to give the okay that high up. You know, being 30 rounds in, maybe you're not too hands on, you know. But yeah, I never really got that. Like Alderson's the establishment and Dom Smith is somehow the anti-establishment.
Right.
I don't know. It's bizarre.
It is. Just a thought exercise for you here. If you had to take this bet today, Ian Kinsler and Wilmer Flores get the same amount of plate appearances in 2018.
Uh-huh.
Who has a more productive season overall?
By war?
Yeah, let's call it war. See, my gut tells me that it would be Kinsler because of his defense.
Right. Like, that's there to keep you afloat. You know, even this year, Fangraphs has him at 2.4, or had him, I should say. And it's not like he was one of the worst hitters in baseball. He was just not a good hitter.
He wasn't 2009, 2010, Ian Kinsler.
Right. And, you know, even 2016, Ian Kinsler was pretty good. So, I don't know. I think that kind of would keep him afloat. Be a little more fun to say, oh, Wilmer Flores is going to be, you know, that guy. But
I don't think it's as far apart as it might sound initially.
Right. So it's just, and when you're looking at that kind of thing, you're looking at the player in isolation. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean, oh, Flores is a better fit as an everyday player at second base in particular for this team. You know, the added defense. And I don't know if Mets fans are too obsessed with defense now. You know, I think there might be one extreme that the Mets have tried and you know, maybe needs to come back the other way. I'm on board with that. But it seems to be something people care about a lot when a year or two ago they didn't care. And that's fine. Changing your mind and, I don't know, evolving as a fan, that's a good thing. So I'm not insulting that. But it's just, it's weird to see an about face on it. You know, D. Gordon to me, the Mets Twitter was all about him a little bit early in this offseason.
Right.
And I'm sure if his name surfaces again or if he gets traded elsewhere, it'll be a hot topic. But either I just don't realize that I've sort of changed what I'm paying attention to, or a whole lot of people used to think D. Gordon was just garbage as a player and now are in love with him. So, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, part of that is I just think, you know, there's this, I don't know. I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is. Like, you know, when your team is doing well, the things that the media or whoever say about the team, you're easy to dismiss. So when the Mets were making the playoffs and all that, and they were saying the defense is bad, their fan base, the knee-jerk reaction is like, fuck you, the defense doesn't matter. When the Mets start to lose and D. Gordon, you know, has a good series against them, all of a sudden it's, oh my goodness, D. Gordon is the answer. Defense matters. Defense wins ball games. You know, we couldn't even get to 500 last season because of our terrible defense. You know, it's just, it becomes the, they're both the reaction to the same thing. They're both people coloring their opinions about baseball and sort of, it's changing your opinion about the process to be based off the results, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just sort of like, I don't know. It's, if you're going into this with, we don't have a lot of money to spend, we're going to put Ian Kinsler at second base, so, you know, we can acquire him. Sure, he's making some money, but we think that's something that really helps us, you know, the traditional, helps us up the middle. We're going to play Juan Lagares every day. We have Rosario. Suddenly, you know, in the universe where Juan Lagares is healthy, and I know we'll get a little more into his overall game in a little bit here, but suddenly you've gotten yourselves this really nice up the middle defense. And, you know, Mets fans will harp on Travis d'Arnaud when throwing out base runners, but there are good aspects of his defensive game, things that he used to be maybe not great at that he's improved. You know, not that he's going to be the gold glove catcher, but if you said, hey, d'Arnaud, Rosario, Kinsler, Lagares is our up the middle, then I think that changes the defensive picture. But you still can't have pitchers who strike out 5 or 6 batters per 9 innings and get hurt and throw 90 innings on the year as like your 3 and 4 pitchers in the rotation. Like,
nor can you not address the offense in any considerable way and expect somehow all the injuries to go away and for the offense to be this you know, powerhouse. There are still, right, major holes on this team, even if the up the middle defense is good.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, the offense right now is, Conforto and Cespedes need to be healthy and, you know, good. Like, or they're very good or best form.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Juan Lagares a little bit more. So John Rico was a guest, current Mets assistant general manager. I was a former resident of Cresco, New Jersey, much like myself. He was on Mets Hot Stove on SNY last week and talked about a number of things, one of which was that Juan Lagares is currently working out with the coach who helped J.D. Martinez get more lift on the ball and have a better launch angle. And the implication was that, you know, this was going to rub off on Lagares. And in addition to his Gold Glove caliber defense, we're also now going to possibly see a thumping power hitter along with that. Now, I will argue that I think that Lagares should be the starting everyday center fielder, regardless if his offense improves at all. Because I do believe in his defense, and I believe that his offense over a full season will be passable if he is bringing as much value defensively as he has in the past. But Chris, do you give any credence to the idea that Juan Lagares could suddenly turn into a power hitter?
I do not. you know, it's one of those things that if you look back, it wouldn't be the first player to ever do it that late. But even Carlos Gomez, I think, was a little bit younger, right? When he broke out.
Probably.
I mean, he had been in the majors for a while, but
he came up so young, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was, let's see, things I should have prepared before the podcast. but is it impossible? No, but
he has a little pop.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't see it. And Gomez was 26 when he hit 19 home runs. You know, that's even at his very best, Gomez was just, you know, amazing center field defense with like very good offense, sort of like Carlos Beltran lights or Carlos Beltran esque, I would say, for a couple of years. But 19 home runs in 2012 when the baseball was, you know, made for this planet, that's not too shabby.
No, certainly not.
But I just don't see it with Lagares. I mean, I'd love to be wrong. I'd love him to be healthy, you know, make 600 plate appearances and hit some home runs. But his career high is six. I don't know.
Am I crazy in thinking that his defense could make up for his bat if he was starting every day? In your opinion?
I think in isolation, he could be a good player despite struggling. Like, I don't know, you know, if you play out what he did in 2017 and just multiply it all by two in terms of plate appearances and WAR, it's a 3-win season. That's not at all how it works. I'm not suggesting it is. You know, that might be a little bit inflated for the type of player he is. It's not like, I guess it's not like he hasn't shown any power, you know?
Right.
But I don't see it. Like if that didn't happen with Kevin Long, why is it going to happen with somebody else? But that maybe that's a question that everybody asks about everything. You know, Justin Turner probably worked with 20 hitting coaches, whatever.
To get the hitch out of his swing. I know what you meant.
I haven't even really had, like, this is beer number one. So just for the record, my mind is halfway on the other side of the world. I think that's what it is. But yeah, Justin Turner must have worked with a dozen, 15, 20 hitting coaches before something clicked. So, you know, that fascinates me. You know, when the one human being says, like, well, what if you do this? And the other one's like, oh, yeah, that totally worked.
I mean, even Daniel Murphy with Kevin Long. You know, Murphy wasn't a bad hitter. by any means before Kevin Long entered his life.
Right.
But Murphy with Long, I mean, there's a marked difference in the pre-Kevin Long, post-Kevin Long, Daniel Murphy offensive stat line.
Oh, yeah. I mean, not even close.
So, I don't know. Like I said, I do think that if the team wants to prioritize defense and they feel they can get a full season of healthy Lagares, I mean, I think if he hits 270 with 10 or 12 home runs, I'm pretty happy with that. Again, that depends on a lot of things. That depends on other players being healthy, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that I think it's more realistic to find a way to make his glove the valuable part than to try and remake him into an offensive powerhouse.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, and like so many other Mets, that would really just mean trying to keep him healthy.
Right.
You know, he's young enough that... Oh, hi, iPhone. He's young enough... Totally prepared for this episode. He's young enough that he can still be a great defender. He's probably not going to get any better, but you know, you wouldn't expect that phase of his game to decline anytime soon.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned the health, because one of the other things that John Rico mentioned on Mets Hot Stove was that they are looking to hire, and I forget the exact name of the position he put out there, but essentially somebody to work with the training staff who wouldn't necessarily travel with the team, but who would be the overseer of all things medical for the team, who would set sort of standards and just generally help to position the team to be the healthiest that they can be without, you know, taping an ankle is the example that Rico gave, you know. Just generally putting more of its resources into the preparation of its players and into the organizational philosophy of what they consider healthy. Obviously, well, maybe not obviously, our listeners should be aware, you and I are not medical professionals, so
no.
We cannot necessarily speak with any authority on this, but this seems like a good idea in principle, right?
Yeah, and it, you know, it's at least trying something new, and it's probably the biggest admission we've seen from them that, hey, what we're doing medically might not be working.
Right, yeah.
And obviously they're not overhauling everything, but I'm very curious to see who they hire for that position. You know, I don't want to get too excited about it because, you know, the offseason theme so far is Juan Lagares is going to start hitting home runs.
Right.
Everybody's going to drink a lot of water.
And they could hire the Dr. Nick Riviera, possibly. You know, so.
Yeah. And it's funny. I tweeted something sarcastic recently about the water thing. And I forget if it was Joe DiMeo who's, you know, written some things for the site recently. So I forget if it was Joe or someone else. You go back and look at my tweets. You can find it. But whoever it was saying, oh, I'm a big believer in water. You know, it's like how different they felt when they were really diligent about staying on top of it, that kind of thing. I'm like reading into this tweet a little bit, but I think that's basically what the spirit of it was. So I'm not saying that doesn't matter, but as like a plan to sell tickets.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we got a new manager who's appealing in a lot of ways. You know, good guy in front of a camera. He's pretty comfortable. He's saying all the right things.
So we got a new manager. Is long.
Yep, there you go. not long like the hitting coach though anymore.
Nope. I see what you did there.
Yeah, that was a stretch.
We had to get in as many puns as we can before you get on a plane to the Southern Hemisphere. So
it was a stretch longer than James Loney's.
Oh, there we go. Booyah.
Can we just play like idea association and see how far back in Mets time we can go?
Yeah, let's go.
Sorry, I got completely off topic. But you get the idea. The off season, you know, the sales pitch to buy your tickets right now is not an overwhelming one.
Right.
But, you know, if there's somebody who's, like, really intelligent and has a good sense of the sport and the types of things that go into it on a medical level, and is sort of distant. It almost sounds like a GM of health.
Right.
You know, I'm going to observe from afar, and I'll make tweaks to things and all that. And I'm curious to see how it's implemented. I also don't know how many other teams have something like this.
Mark Carrig was also on the show, and Carrig had said that a number of teams have done this, and that this is sort of a move that cutting edge teams made a number of years ago.
Okay, well, better to be current, I guess.
Yeah. To me, this sounds like a fine idea for the Mets, and it seems like an idea that probably would not have been, what's the word I'm looking for here? Would not have been noteworthy if there was anything resembling a successful season coming before this. Like, if the Mets didn't totally crater last season, this move wouldn't be looked at as anything special. It would just be, oh, the Mets are making a tweak to the way their front office, you know, operates with in regards to health. Versus when you know, new manager, new pitching coach, new hitting coach, new director of medical training, whatever, all those things add up just, and they look more significant than maybe the move is in isolation.
Yeah, I think so. And it's a lot of this stuff might not even happen if they had been good.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So.
Well, to wrap up our segment here tonight, we got to talk about the AAOP, and we have a winner. And Chris has graciously offered to sing the entire entry for our podcast listeners. If you have been following along on Amazing Avenue, we had a number of really good entries this year. We had about five or six that the staff had sort of agreed upon were the best ones. We put them out there for you guys to vote. And the winner was entitled Mets Gonna Win the Series. And who was the author on that, Chris?
MZ Valerian. I always feel like I get... Yeah. Yep. MZ Valerian. At Russ T.E.S. Hackleford on Twitter. and just look at the post.
Yeah, just look at the post,
it's
guys.
A hard one to say.
But he essentially set his AAOP to the tune of We Didn't Start the Fire. The
he
consensus
did.
Worst Billy Joel song?
I think that's a fair way to put it.
Yeah. But regardless of whether you like the original or not, I think we can all agree that his AAOP was incredibly interesting, and it really stood out from the pack because it was a Weird Al-esque song parody. But Chris, you have the post right in front of you. What are some of the the talking points from the AAOP? What does he want the team to do besides just win the series?
So if I'm translating a little bit, and we were talking about this a little bit before we recorded, word count wise, this may be the shortest winner we've ever had. But if I'm trying to put it into non-song terms, Christian Yelich is really a focus here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big focal point. Howie Kendrick coming in, that's bringing in some outfielders, certainly not going on the Lagares plan. Lagares isn't a part of the team as he constructed it. Pretty much sticks with the usual suspects in the infield, behind the plate. Tyler Chatwood, who is very popular in the AAOP. I feel like if he wasn't on your AAOP, you didn't really do one.
Agreed, yeah. And the other surprise one, Jerickson Profar on half the AAOPs, it seemed like.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting time to for him to be popular. But, you know, so it's really outfield heavy in that sense. The starting pitching, Tyler Chatwood, R.A. Dickey, sign me up.
Yep.
You know, filling the middle of the rotation and pushing Harvey, Matz, et cetera, you know, out of it into the depth fields, so to speak. And I think trading some of them away, forgive me if I don't. There's no transactional list here. It's all lyrics. So for themes, you know, outfield help, middle of the rotation help, and then, you know, in his bullpen is Familia, Blevins, Cishek, Shaw, Robles, Callahan, Smoker. Gets a little questionable there at the back end, but
yeah,
you know, Cishek, Shaw, that's a very appealing combination of relievers.
Absolutely.
So, you know, in that sense, it's this very entertaining AAOP, just on the comedy level and musically, right? But it hits on the three things that I think, I mean, in an ideal world, there would be four things that they would improve, and those are all four major components of the team.
Right, exactly.
But it hits on three of them. You know, it's outfield, middle of the rotation, middle to, you know, middle to high leverage section of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's all. If the Mets did this or something like it, I could at least be on board with, okay, this team has a good shot at being over 500, and being over 500 in the two wild card era means contending.
Right. Right.
Now,
we did not do AAOPs this year, you and me. We did last
correct.
Year. But can you give folks like three moves you would have advocated for if you did an AAOP?
Well, I'm all about bringing back Dickey, whether or not that would be mutual interest on his behalf. I don't know. But that's, you know, that's a fun one and a semi-serious one from my perspective. I really like Alex Cobb. I don't know why he was the free agent starting pitcher I kind of latched on to coming into this offseason, partly because I have been conditioned to just know that Yu Darvish and Jake Arrieta are not affordable for this team.
Of course.
Of all the players out there, I know this is not a complete plan and it doesn't solve all the problems, but I'm a Mets fan and I love Yu Darvish. So my AAOP may have been, was last year just sign Cespedes and do nothing?
I believe so. Yes.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Which that's slightly oversimplifying it, but kind of what happened. But,
and we all see how that worked out.
But, yeah, so my fun one would be sign Yu Darvish. Do nothing else. I get to go to I almost said Shea Stadium. I get to go to Citi Field and watch Yu Darvish pitch in a Mets uniform. But the more serious, realistic would be, I don't know, I was a little surprised Cobb got a qualifying offer and that he turned it down. You know, if you're going to critique that move in my hypothetical plan, you know, he hasn't been the most consistently healthy starting pitcher, and that's sort of the thing that you need to cure.
Right.
The most in this rotation, but the talent, and he's still throwing more innings than, say, Steven Matz. So something like him, maybe I'm too fond of Neil Walker, but I would look to bring him back. I think he'll be a little more affordable. And, you know, I don't know. Am I just saying Alex Cobb and bring back the 2017 Mets? Lucas Duda. Give me Duda, Walker, and Cobb, and I'd be pretty happy. But unfortunately, at that point, I probably left myself out of having any money for the bullpen. So,
right, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, any marquee signings in your hypothetical AAOP?
I mean, this is very hashtag on brand for me, but Lucas Duda, I would bring back.
Right.
But again, I think Duda financially makes sense. I think he fits one of their needs. And we know that he likes playing in New York. You know, it makes sense to me. I would go after either a Dickey or a Cologne. Again, just going with Bay, former Bays, you know, of the teams. But it's somebody like that, an innings eater who can just provide stability in the middle of that rotation. And then I would commit most of my resources to the bullpen. I really truly believe that DeGrom and Syndergaard can throw, you know, in the 180 to 210 range for innings this year if they stay healthy, if not more than that. I think that the rest of the starters are all going to give you a hard time with that. And so, you know, the team has talked about potentially pulling some starters after two times through the rotation. And if you're going to do that, you need to have a stacked bullpen. So I would commit a fair amount of resources. I like Shaw and C-Shack as Mets going to win the series said. You know, I would bring in two or three high-quality arms, you know, to shore up that bullpen. I know Alderson does not like doing multi-year deals for relievers, and I understand that, but I think at this point you have to be considering that. And I would, I think with Duda, with an innings eater or two in the rotation, you know, cheap innings eaters and a fortified bullpen, with a little bit of health luck, the team could compete. The real bummer of this, as I was reading all the AAOPs, even the ones that went maybe a little bit further into the unlikely territory, I just think this team's going to have a very hard time competing next season if they do the things we all think they're going to do. There needs to be something big to happen, or everybody needs to be the healthiest they've ever been, slash the most productive they've ever been. And, you know, that's a little bit depressing. So for my AAOP, I wouldn't try and blow up the team because I don't think that there's a way to blow up the team and win and be successful a year or two down the road.
Right. And actually, you bringing up C-Shack again reminded me of my favorite thing, which would not have fit into the AAOP that I just outlined for budgetary reasons.
Uh-huh.
But give me Pat Neshek and C-Shack. I don't know if any team has ever had two guys. No, I can say confidently, no team has ever had two guys with last names ending in S-H-E-K on its roster at the same time.
If you can prove Chris wrong, podcast at AmazingAvenueAudio.com. Give us proof. And I will say this, as the editor of this podcast, if anybody out there, but specifically the winner himself, would like to perform Mets Gonna Win the Series, I will put it into the show for next time.
Oh, absolutely.
I might have to consult with our legal counsel about the about parody law, etc., but we'll make it work somehow. If you could change it just enough to not sound like we didn't start the fire, I would really appreciate that from a financial responsibility standpoint. But yeah, so I'll be back next week. Chris, safe travels.
And thank you.
If you feel like sending in a segment, if you see a couple of Mets caps in the wild, if something fun happens, you want to comment on it, or even if you hear some Mets news and want to give the listeners your hot take, just send me some files and we'll get them on the air.
Yeah. Hey, I can't make any promises, but if they trade for Giancarlo Stanton, I think I can, record 1 or 2 minutes of excitement.
You'll hear about Stanton if you need to call Stanton.
Yeah.
Oh, Derek Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
Stanton's not getting a gift basket.
He is not.
This is Steve Seiber, and I'm back to talk about some really exciting stuff. Minor league roster management. Woo! I think this is pretty exciting stuff, but then again, I think that the history and politics of the Silk Road is fun, and I spend more time on Microsoft Word than on my PlayStation 4, so maybe my definition of fun and exciting isn't exactly mainstream. But anyway, The Rule 5 draft is approaching, so the Mets had to protect various minor leaguers that could have been exposed to it. And they had 5 spots open, and there really weren't any surprises with the players that they added. They added 4 guys, shortstop Luis Guillorme, starter Corey Oswalt, and relievers Ty Bachelor and Gerson Bautista. So Guillorme, he's the only position player on the list. He's primarily known for his defense, and that's pretty much it. I'm not really a fan of his approach at the plate, which is basically slash away, 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 which is why he's hard to strike out and he draws a lot of walks, but basically only has double power down the right field line. And that kind of approach leaves him with a pretty thin margin for error to begin with, and then in the major leagues it's going to be even thinner. And there's no denying that his defense at shortstop is a plus, but I feel that the kind of black hole bat minimizes utility from a team construction standpoint, even as a backup defensive replacement player that's not really getting that many innings. But he is a guy that really needed to be protected. You don't want to lose him. Next up is Corey Oswalt. He's another guy that I'm not really that high on. He had a great season last year, no doubt. He posted a 2.28 ERA in 134 innings with Binghamton, but the numbers don't really match this stuff, I don't think. This is true of really any player, I guess, but Oswalt really has to be perfect and have everything working right in order to have success. His fastball, 88 to 93, with a bit of life to both sides in sync when he's able to fully extend his arm, but he's been inconsistent with that in the past, so his kind of below-average fringy fastball is flat at times. His slider, it's a below-average fringe pitch. It sits in the low 80s with shallow kind of sweepy break. And his changeup, same thing. It's a below-average fringe pitch. The couple of times I've seen him, he was good when he was basically being a pitch-to-contact guy, locating his fastball, mixing in his slider and changeup, just to kind of switch up hitters and letting the defense behind him do his thing. And when he was bad, it seemed like he was trying to be too fancy and too fine with his location, and he was getting burned by it, and his fastball wasn't really getting much sink. So the overall package is so-so, and he's more of a back-end starter, but given all the injuries that the Mets have had with the pitching staff and all the problems there, a lot of Oswalt's value is that he's not terrible, and he is in the upper minors, and he could step in to throw major league innings if need be. Next guy is Ty Bachelor. He was a 2013 draft pick, and he lost some developmental time to Tommy John surgery, but when he got back on the mound in 2016, he looked pretty good. His fastball sits in the mid-90s, and it's touched as high as 98, and it's pretty much, it's a legitimate swing-and-miss pitch, and it should carry him to Queens if everything else goes right. What he needs to work on are two things, his slider and his control. His slider, it's pretty much his primary breaking ball, and it's a kind of slurvy pitch, and it needs to be tightened up in order to improve. And his control really needs to be worked on. He walks a lot of guys, and as a reliever, that's kind of the biggest thing that you can do. So if he's able to tighten up his slider a little bit and work on his command, he'll definitely find himself on the fast track to pitching out of the Mets bullpen before not too long. And Gerson Bautista, who was the last player that was added, he was acquired from the Red Sox in exchange for Addison Reed this past season, is pretty similar to Ty Bachelor. Bautista has a better fastball. His has hit triple digits occasionally, but he also has an inconsistent slider and control problems. So same thing with Bautista. He needs to work on tightening up his slider, and he just needs to get the walks under control. So with these additions, the Mets have 39 of the 40 spots in the 40-man roster filled, and there's a few other guys that a case could have been made for adding them, but definitely not over those 4 guys. Adonis Uceta, Mickey Janis, and Ricky Knapp are the only guys that needed to be added that a case could have been made, and that you could make a case that they're going to be selected by another team. Uceta was an underdeveloped two-pitch starter that basically got transitioned into the bullpen full-time, and he had a decent year last season in his first year as a reliever. He spent most of his time in Columbia, and then he got into a bunch of games at St. Lucie and Binghamton near the end of the season. He saw a slight uptick in his fastball velocity. It used to sit in the mid-90s and peaked as high at, excuse me, it used to sit in the low 90s and peaked as high as the mid 90s. But as a reliever, it sat in the mid 90s and peaked as high as the high 90s. His changeup is an above average pitch, but his slider is pretty rough. So the move to the bullpen meant he could basically scrap the slider and just be a fastball changeup reliever, and it all worked out for him. He's an older prospect. He's going to be turning 24 next May. But with his those two pitches, his fastball and his changeup, there's some major league bullpen potential there. The thing is, and what makes possibly losing him palatable if he's selected and the Mets lose him, is that arms like his aren't exactly a dime a dozen, but they're pretty plentiful throughout baseball. The two relievers that the Mets protected, Bautista and Bachelor, they're pretty similar profiles and upsides. And there's a bunch of guys in the lower end of the system that could conceivably turn into relievers at some point, just like Uceda was. So it wouldn't be terrible if the Mets lose Uceda, and it wouldn't be a crushing and devastating blow to the system. Mickey Janis, he's the next guy, and I hope, as everyone knows by now, is a knuckleball pitcher. He had a pretty decent season last year, and the most encouraging thing about it statistically is that he trimmed down his walk rate. He walked 38 guys in 122 innings, and his strikeout rate slightly went up. He struck out 83 guys. That translates to a 2.8 walks per nine rate, which is solid for a starter, and exceptional for a knuckleball pitcher, and a 6.1 strikeout per nine rate. So to put that in context, since 2010, when he became a bona fide major leaguer, R.A. Dickey has a 2.7 walk rate and a 6.9 walk rate. Janis is no Dickey, don't get me wrong, no one is, praise Dickey. Janis has a better fastball than Dickey. His fastball sits in the mid to high 80s, but he doesn't have as good as a knuckleball as Dickey. Dickey has the hard one and the slow one. Well, Janis only has one. It sits in the mid to high 70s. It hits 80, 81, 82 here or there. And it's definitely nowhere near as good as Dickey's is in terms of movement. Ricky Knapp, he's another guy that the Mets did not protect that could conceivably be selected by another team. He had a pretty terrible season in Vegas this past season, but he's the kind of pitcher that Vegas probably victimizes the most. His stuff is pretty average across the board, with nothing sticking out as being particularly bad and nothing sticking out as being particularly good. His fastball sits 88 to 92, which is fringe average for right-hander, but he commands it well, he uses the entire strike zone, and he can add or subtract to fool hitters' timing. His changeup doesn't have that much fade, but it has enough plane change to upset hitters' timing. Cutter is also fringy, but it's enough to keep left-handers honest. Slider, curveball, again, fringy pitches. Like Corey Oswalt, a lot of Knapp's utility is that he's in the upper minors, and in a pinch, he could be called up to start, though the results of any potential major league innings might not be the best. David Roseboom, he's another guy that the Mets could have added, but didn't. Roseboom had a pretty good season in Binghamton in 2016, and then he got bit by the Vegas bug last year, and he got hurt in June and lost the rest of his season. So his stock might be low enough that he gets overlooked, and the Mets didn't need to protect him. They were looking at him in spring training last year as the second lefty, and when he's on and everything's working, he could probably be a little bit more than just, you know, the one-out lefty guy, since he gets righties out almost as well as he does lefties, probably because his delivery is very extreme sidearm, similar to Madison Bumgarner. His fastball velocity is about average for a southpaw. It's 88 to 92 or so, and it gets good run because of the arm slot. His slider has a lot of movement on it, again, because of the arm slot. And the changeup used to be a well below average pitch, and he's refined it enough that it's still fringy, but it's workable, and it's something that hitters need to be aware of. So there's still one more roster spot open, so maybe the Mets are looking to make a trade. Maybe they're looking to make a free agent signing or two. Or maybe they're looking to pick up a player in the Rule 5 draft, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. Regarding that last one, there's a few intriguing names on that list of guys that have not been protected that the Mets could select. So I will be back next week on Amazing Avenue Audio to profile some of those guys.
Well, folks, that does it for another installment of Amazing Avenue Audio. Thank you so much for listening. We truly appreciate it. We hope you also go to AmazingAvenue.com, where you can check out all of our off-season news, our analysis, our games, all the fun stuff we have going on there. You can also find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can always email this show at podcast@AmazingAvenueAudio.com. We look forward to hearing from you over the off-season with your trade suggestions, free agent analysis, whatever else you guys want to talk about. We're game for it. So podcast@AmazingAvenueAudio.com. You can download this show you're listening to right now, directly from our host at blogtalkradio.com. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, or on your podcatcher of choice. On Apple Podcasts, we would ask you to please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. That helps us quite a bit. And you can follow all of the contributors this week on Twitter. I'm at Brian Needs a Nap, Chris is at Chris McShane, and Steve is at Steve Saipa. So next week, hopefully the Mets will make a splash, whether via trade or via free agency at the winter meetings, and you'll hear all about it here on Amazing Avenue Audio. And so, until next time, let's go Mets.